Quick note, the fourth nor'easter in the past 3 weeks is hitting the east on this, the first full day of spring. Snow started falling last night in West Virginia and Kentucky. Today, the mid-Atlantic, including D.C. And by later today, it will blanket New York and New England. Airlines have already canceled thousands of flights. Amtrak has scaled back service on the Northeast Corridor, so travelers take note. Schools are well aware of the weather. If they're open, kids are probably not out in the playgrounds. Although there are schools starting to send bundled kids out to play in the cold, it's part of a move to get kids to take more risks. Advocates say riskier play reduces bullying and obesity and teaches kids balance and decision-making that reduces injuries when they become adults. They say there's been a sterilization of play, partly because of the way it's regulated. Let's back up. There's a Consumer Product Safety Commission that collects injury data so they can figure out which kinds of play equipment cause injuries. But our next guest says that shows the injuries, but not why they happen. You know, was a kid on an age-appropriate swing? Was mulch raked? Because if not, it can harden like cement. And she says no one is accounting for a balance between risk and the many benefits. In Britain, there's been a government-down move to change this way of thinking. Some schools throwing away those plastic playhouses and bringing in 2x4s, crates, loose bricks, using knives with adult supervision, fire pits. And American designers are paying attention. In Washington, there's a playground at a private school, Beauvoir, that has a zip line, wobbly wooden bridges, rope tunnels between giant wood towers. So what can public schools do? Bambi Yost is an associate professor of landscape architecture at Iowa State University. Bambi, hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
From your point of view, what is the concern?
Well, I would say one of the concerns is that children aren't necessarily pushing themselves as much as they could be. Some of that's because of overprotective parents. Some of it's because of regulations or restrictions in school settings. Some of it's because they don't necessarily know how to challenge themselves in fun, risk-taking ways that can lead to really positive outcomes for them as adults, you know, where they're more innovative and creative and more likely to take risks alone or with others.
So, for instance, we're seeing schools, and this again is in the UK, it's not just in the playgrounds, in the classrooms too. A teacher talking about there would be knives with adult supervision, but they're also putting back sharp-edged tape dispensers because, as one teacher said, well, they usually only cut themselves once, and then you learn that you could cut yourselves on those things. Is that part of it, too, learning the consequences of certain things?
Absolutely. We don't necessarily want to encourage them to potentially harm themselves, but the beauty is that kids are incredibly good. You know, they fall down. They get back up and they continue to do that sort of thing over and over again. And those are all really big skills that they need to learn at a very young age, especially with balance, for example, so that they're better balanced later in life.
Well, in fact, you and Megan Talarowski, another American landscape designer, Megan gathered data from London in 2015. She went to these parks that we talked about that the government's actually changing. They have signs in front of some of these parks saying, we're making these parks riskier, you know, as a warning. What did Megan find?
Well, you know, Megan has done extensive research in the UK, and I work with her in Philadelphia. She's the director of Studio Ludo. Most of the play environments that she saw there, you know, their kids are being exposed to much more opportunities for challenging environments than what we have here. They can play with sand. They can run around with tools, pieces of wood. You know, they can build things. In the United States, we're so risk adverse and it's such a litigious society that we tend to shift away from things like that unless it's a privately run organization or a place that has a lot of monitoring and supervision.
We can understand why, because some of the things you're talking about, workbenches with hammers and saws, mud pits, you know, are any public schools doing this?
We've had some moderate success just recently here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Megan worked with us at a school called Nebinger Elementary School. It's a K-8. And there's a science teacher there, Javier Dominguez, who's awesome. What they're doing at that schoolyard is they have an EPA stormwater garden that has been underutilized because, again, fear of children getting injured in a natural play environment. And this past fall, my students from Iowa State University went with me to Philadelphia, and we assisted the 6th through 8th graders at the school with Javier. All of us worked together to actually prune and thin out the stormwater garden so that kids could have this experience of being in a naturalized setting. And the thing that is really unique about this school is Javier is not afraid to let them use tools. And so in the classroom, he has support from the administration down that allows him to have them building bird boxes. And so they built these birdhouse boxes. They have a solar-powered roof that has a little tiny camera in it so that they can see what the birds are doing.
This all sounds wonderful, but it's even more organized than what we're seeing in some of these playgrounds in Britain. I mean, just putting loose bricks around. I can just see a teacher. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the hope would be the kids would build with it, but you know a kid's going to pick it up and throw it at another
right.
kid. And so who's liable there?
This is what's interesting. So we actually did introduce more loose materials. And I think people take for granted that plant materials are not loose, but they are. Meaning that, you know, a lot of times we're not allowed to put fruit trees in schoolyards, for example, because people are afraid that they're going to throw, you know, a giant apple at somebody. But what we did at this school as well is we worked with the Fairmont Recycling Program where they have trees. And my students and I went there and we literally handpicked big hardwood trees that I taught my students how to use chainsaws, actually.
Oh,
they were all moving huge tree stumps. We cut them down to the best of our ability and then we took them to the school and the 6th and 8th graders helped us unload everything. And then we did more chainsawing at the school. And so part of what we were doing was working with the kids to figure out what we needed. And in addition, we were also then providing loose parts. So little tiny discs that are essentially cut sections off of tree limbs are really fun because you can stack them, you can build with them. And this school in particular has a relatively high autistic population. So autistic kids really need hands-on experiential learning and opportunities to enhance their fine motor skills, to touch materials, and it actually encourages them to interact with others. So we had autistic children out helping us place these stumps all over that entire EPA stormwater garden. So what's nice about it is it's not permanent, so it's less threatening to a school district. Because if there is an incident and something happens where a kid falls off of one of the logs, they can remove it.
Lucky school that has, you know, you and others coming in to do this. But it sounds like you're saying, don't be afraid of putting in a big sandbox or a big pit with dirt and a lot of shovels or some pieces of 2x4.
Absolutely.
And just let kids do with them what they may.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that I see the most in an urban area in particular, is that kids don't necessarily understand how the world works in terms of ecosystems, digging, you know, having that freedom to explore the physical earth around us. You know, I grew up in a rural setting. I took for granted the fact that I was able to go to a creek, build a dam, catch frogs, do whatever I wanted all day long, and then come home for dinner. Kids rarely get to do that anymore. Very few children today are considered free range, meaning that they can just go and do what they want to and have full autonomy. And with that autonomy comes self-regulation. You take more risks, but you can also then incrementally challenge yourself. So kids that are in a highly urbanized setting with limited natural or naturalized areas really don't have exposure to that unless we provide it for them.
Yeah. I just want to ask one last thing. Surfaces. Mm-hmm. It used to be you just had asphalt and kids would fall off swing sets and it was not good in some occasions. And then we started getting the mulch. And then now there's almost, I was at a playground the other day, completely tiled with these sort of rubber tiles. Mm-hmm. You almost bounce on them throughout the whole playground. I can see parents saying, isn't this wonderful? No skin knees. You say what?
I say it's expensive.
Yeah, that's it.
It is wonderful in the sense that kids are not falling and injuring themselves at the same rate necessarily. And poured in place rubber is awesome because you can add color and it looks cool and it's a bouncy surface. And it does, in fact, encourage kids to roll and tumble a little bit more on those surfaces. But at the same time, it's not 100% guarantee that your child won't break an arm. And it's also, again, limiting them to understand what it's like to scrape your knee, to know that not all surfaces, when you fall out of them, are in fact, safe and soft. Kids who grow up with grass underneath a swing set, for example, learn pretty quickly that if they jump off of that swing set, they, in fact, will injure themselves. Kids who've only been on a poured-in-place rubber surface that jump off are less likely to injure themselves. But then if they go to another, you know, park-like setting or somebody's backyard and they do the same thing, they're more likely to injure themselves there. And so what we've seen is you have higher rates of injury actually in your neighbor's backyard than you would at any public park or public schoolyard.
Because you're so protected. Plus, there's that stunning realization, what? Life hurts?
Yeah.
Bambi Yost, an associate professor of landscape architecture at Iowa State University on new thinking about bringing risk into playgrounds and classrooms. Bambi, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
So readers commented when the New York Times wrote about riskier playgrounds. Here's a couple. I remember thinking padded playgrounds were overkill. Then I saw a four-year-old fall backwards off a swing. If not for padding, he might have been killed. Here's another. If someone asked about bricks, isn't there something between foam and a brick? So we want your thoughts. What's your school doing? Leave a comment at hereandnow.org.